Hello, Duke fans, and welcome to the Duke Basketball Roundup. We are here, and this is a great, great day because we get to interview one of the all-time greats in Duke basketball history. Before we bring him on, I'm Donald Wine. I'm your host for this episode. I got Jason Evans with me. Jason, quickly say what's up to the people.
What's up to the people? Man, I want to get to this interview. This guy is an absolute legend, and we're so lucky to be talking to him.
Absolutely. And we thank this person for being on. We're going to bring him on right now. All-American for Duke, one of the all-time greats in Duke basketball history, none other than Gene Banks, right here at the Duke Basketball Roundup. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And I've heard a lot of good things about your show. And I know I've gotten a lot of interviews recently. And I find it interesting, like as I mentioned before, as I started out, I get certain accolades and so forth. I try to maintain being humble, because my mom always had that in me. But when you get older, you get honorary, and you want to tell, you want to speak your claim, because if you don't beat your own chest, nobody else will do it for you. So I'll stay humble, but I also will tell what it's all about when it comes to definitely not just my beginnings, but Duke basketball.
I'm here to tell you, this is not the show for you to be humble. You can brag as much as you want about being one of the Duke basketball players, great ones of all time here on this show, because that's what we're about. So I want to start with this, Gene. You know, going back to your recruitment, obviously you were one of the elite players coming out of West Philadelphia, but at the same time, you were in a different era, obviously, than we were now. And there was a little bit of shock when you committed to Duke, because of the fact that Duke had not established itself as kind of one of those places where successful elite black athletes wanted to go. So tell us a little bit about what it was like. Obviously there were some concerns, but did you share in those concerns that other people had about you going to Duke, and what ultimately attracted you to Duke University and say, yes, this is where I want to spend the next 4 years of my life?
Well, what's interesting, it was really divine intervention. Let me be very, very, very clear. It really was. The influence was Dr. William H. Detwiler, who was my English teacher at West Philadelphia High School. As you see in the background, that's my high school's, that's the front door we used to go into school. West Philadelphia High School is in West Philadelphia. And in West Philadelphia, so I can give you some history, there was another school that was really, two other schools in West Philadelphia that were renowned. Overbrook High School, which is the school that was attended by Wilt Chamberlain, Walt Hazard, and Will Smith. And then also they had a great player during the time of one of my peers, Lewis Lloyd. We called him Black Magic. So my time coming up in Sandlot in grade school and high school, basketball in Philadelphia was flourishing with a lot of great talent. Fran McCaffrey, who is the coach of Iowa, played at LaSalle High School. And out of all the games that I played in high school, I only lost two in my 3 years. And one of those schools that we lost to was LaSalle High School, which was a Catholic school. It was like a preseason game my second year. And then we lost to Long Island Lutheran. But Fran McCaffrey, look at him, he looks like a banker. You know, he looks like you never think he was a ball player, but he was the mini-me of Pete Maravich. His ball handling skills were exceptional. His passing abilities were phenomenal. So, and also during that time, we had Michael Brooks, who played in the pros, who was a great player, Lewis Lloyd, Jeffrey Clark, now who was an NCAA referee, Calvin Dixon went to Harvard. There was just a slew of players that were just phenomenal, and the late Clarence Tilghman, who played with me. But Duke thing, being as named the number one player, what people don't really know is, it was out there with Albert King, who was in Fort Hamilton High School, and Magic Irvin Johnson, who was in Flint, Michigan. Michigan, the area there. And we were touted as the top players, and I got the nod of being a top player during that year, 1977. At that time, I had to try to pick six schools. So when it came down to, besides playing, you had to get serious before visit some schools. And the schools that I picked were schools that's on TV. North Carolina was one of them I picked. I saw them in the NCAAs. Michigan was another one with Ricky Green. The other team was NC State, and the influence was David Thompson. The fourth one was UCLA, which I really, really liked, and I almost pretty much was going to go there. At Notre Dame, who had at the time was coached by Digger Phelps, who was crazy in his recruiting, and I had one spot open, and I didn't know where I was going to pick. I was going to pick one of those schools like Hawaii, just to go visit. You know, Hawaii. Who doesn't want to go to Hawaii? And the NCAA changed.
You got to be strategic when you're taking recruiting visits.
Yes,
I get it.
Yes, yes. My coach, my high school coach, Joel Goldenberg, who truly was a model of steering my career and making me who I was as a player. And he told me, we got to sit down. We got to pick schools for you to visit. And I had one open. I went over to Dr. Deadwell's house. I was getting tutoring on the weekends. And Bill Foster, who was the coach at the time, stopped by the school because he was well known up in that eastern region, that northeast region, because he had coached at Bloomsburg State and he was well known. He dropped a book over at the school. He stopped by the school. He wasn't close to my coach, but he dropped a book of the campus, not the team. So my high school coach didn't think anything of it. He throws the book at me. I take the book. I put it in my backpack. Let me be very clear. We didn't have really backpacks back then. I put it in we had the straps, you know, back in the day.
The satchels, yeah.
Yeah, the satchels. So I went over to his house and I had the book and he's looking at it. He says, Duke University, very fine institution, great architecture, blah, blah, blah. And he just kept harping on the fact that how many more visits I had. That's, I got one more. He says, you should, if you don't do anything else, go visit the school. And it was not about the sports. It was about the architecture, academia. And to get him off my back, I said, okay, I'll go visit. What's the harm? So we put it in there. My high school coach, no one thought anything of it. Duke had been in last place for 3 or 4 years in a row. They hadn't gotten past the first round of the ACC tournament. They just had been in the doldrum for a good 4 or 5 years, and there was no idea of it. So make a long story short, I picked them to go visit. I visit schools one after another. I went to UCLA. I went to Carolina. I went to NC State, and I loved them. UCLA was what was really the best trip, because I got to see Tom Bradley. I got to see Will Chamberlain, the palm trees, California, all of that. Also got the chance to go to Hugh Hefner's mansion. So, so that was,
hang on. You know, wait. Hang on.
Yeah, whoa, so whoa, there's got to be a side story there.
Oh, my okay, God.
We're going to save the side story about that for offline. But you mean to tell me that after all that, and because, you know, I love Durham, but we ain't got Hef. You still pick Duke over Hef. How? How?
If they had the letter of intent in front of me when I went there, I would have signed it. Okay.
Oh, just be clear. I can imagine.
If the letter of intent was a lot of pressure.
The
letter of intent,
they had the you mean at intent, the Playboy Mansion? You would have signed it.
Hugh Hefner's mansion. I would have signed it that day. Believe me. I just want to let you know. I like Gene Bartow, and they also had Marcus Johnson, who was a player. I think he was going to leave soon, but he was a guy that showed me around, which I loved. I enjoyed the time with him, but that was the key. So the thing with Duke was I came down to visit, you know, being a number one player, they're going to roll the red carpet out. I think Pete Budko was another player that was being visited, some couple of players. I didn't pay any attention to that. But when I visited Duke, I saw the school. The architecture was phenomenal. The campus and the school itself was amazing. It was a smaller campus. I saw a lot of students that were from around the world. That was another thing. And then I saw a small contingent of Black community players. Not players, but students that were there. And I got a chance, and almost Harold Morrison almost got in trouble where I skipped away from him to find out certain things on my own. I went to a party, I went to certain things, and people didn't know who I was when I was there. And I was engaged in feeling what it was for as being a Black athlete, being at Duke University. And they had some issues and some things that were going on there, but Harold Morrison was a key. So when I visited there, I liked what I saw, I felt it, blah, blah, blah. I came back. They didn't necessarily become the biggest key, because the biggest key was, the toughest part was that people wanted me to stay home. All right, I was raised in the Big Five. People that don't know Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the Big Five is LaSalle, St. Joe's, Villanova, Penn, and I forget the other schools.
Drexel.
Yeah, no, not Drexel. Drexel wasn't in the Big Five. Well, that
Temple, group. Temple,
Temple. I'm sorry, yeah,
Temple. And John,
I know Cheney the Big Five. I know the Big Five.
And people don't realize the Big Five. The way the Big Five was is that they had double hitters. So these teams, when they had their games, LaSalle would play Temple, St. Joe's would play Villanova, double hitters at the Palestra. Here's a history fact for you: the Palestra and Cameron Indoor Stadium are the same exact design.
Oh, wow. That is pretty
same
amazing.
Same exact design. The guy that designed Cameron Indoor Stadium designed the Palestra, Adderley. His name is Adderley, African-American guy. He went to University of Penn's architectural school, and he designed that and parts of the chapel and parts of Duke. Interesting scenario, be connected. Here I'm from Philadelphia. Here it is. And going back to the Big Five. So the Big Five was our biggest thing. You know, we didn't know anything about anything else outside of that. You know, you saw David Thompson the year he had beating UCLA, so that was an influence. So I visited those schools a week after September, week after week after week after week, weekend after weekend. Michigan and Notre Dame I did not visit because I was burnt out. I was at UCLA. I was at Carolina one weekend. The next week I was at NC State. The next weekend I was at UCLA, and then Duke was the final. And then the next two, I just decided I didn't even go to Michigan and Notre Dame. Digger Phelps was pissed, but that's okay. So as that goes on, as that goes on, I didn't. A lot of times I couldn't be home because there were a lot of teams, undercurrent teams that were putting money in trash cans and stuff like that that I didn't even know. You know, I know there was a time where someone called and it was a Nike box in the trash can of my mom's, our home alleyway. And I looked and it was maybe about $20,000 or $30,000 in there. And my brother saw it. And then we brought it. He brought it, took it to my mom. And my mom said, no, whoever it is, when they call back or when they call, tell them to give it back. That comes with the price. And mind me, when I look back at it, as I get older, I should have took the damn money because everybody was getting paid. Ralph Sampson got paid. Sam Bowie got paid. Even Clarence Tillman. Everybody got side money, and it was crazy. Not all of us, but some of us. A lot of guys got paid a lot of money. You know, this was before NIL and all that. That was the undercut of NIL. But to make a long story short, when I finally got to the whole saga, Penn would have had me lock, stock, and barrel. The problem with Penn was the Ivy League did not break from the other ranks of, you had to be a freshman. When you played freshman basketball, you had to play on a freshman team. Mm-hmm. You couldn't play varsity. And it was like that even going back to the Larry Brown and Art Heyman days back then, Will Chamberlain, even Luau Cinder, Bill Walton had to play freshman basketball.
Yep.
But UCLA, Penn, in the Ivy League, didn't change the rule. They were only conference, didn't change the rules. So that totally eliminated them from me even going there. They had a great point that, you know, Chuck Daly was there and he left. Then Coach Weinhauer was there. I liked Penn. They had a player named Tim Smith who played with me at West Philadelphia High School who was on that team. So they really had me. But the fact of me playing on a freshman team, even though it was a lesser season, it was their way of getting everybody acclimated. I felt that me playing a freshman basketball team didn't make any sense. So
Gene, sorry, I want to jump in really quick and ask a question because I was going to ask you about playing as a freshman. You ended up playing. You guys reached the national championship game.
Cinderella year. Cinderella year. It changed the history of Duke basketball. It changed the history of Durham community. They hailed me as like the Messiah kind of thing. I mean, season tickets. From what I gathered and saw from afar, being up in Philly before I even got there, the season tickets went off the roof. They redid the Cameron Indoor Stadium with renovations and all that. So that time of getting the number one player for them and how they got me pretty much was I came home, I was upstairs, and I told my mom, I really don't know where I want to go. I mean, I'm 17 years old. Every school is just as nice as the other one. They laid the red carpet out. I'm number one player, so you know they're going to do that. I really don't know where to go. And my mom said to me, she said, listen, go in your room. I want you to lay down. I want you to pray about it. And I said, okay. You know, you you know, this is a different culture now, but you listen to your parents and your mom when they tell you to do something, especially raised in the church that we were, Pentecostal. And I closed my door. My mom locked my door. My mom never locked my door. We had one of those old doors where you had the skeleton key and you can lock it. And she locked my door. I laid down, I put on some music, and I closed my eyes. And I remember the visual I had was Duquesne University sent me a book, a brochure, a sports brochure, and they had in there Norm Nixon. And Norm Nixon had a shirt that had Dukes on it. Okay, if they were called the Dukes, but you didn't see the S. And in my mind, I visualized that, seeing Norm Nixon going, thumbing through the brochure. And when I laid down, I dreamt of being wearing a Duke uniform. And I dreamt about playing at Duke and playing in the game, the season, the fans. It was like a dream that I had. And then when I woke up the next morning, I said, Mom, because my mom always taught us to believe in when God talks to you in visions and speaks to you. And we believed in that. And I said, I know where I want to go. It was like God put a vision in my head. This is what you want to do. I told her that. She ran down and said, let me call the school and let them know. She called the school. School said, no, you can don't come up here right now. We got to set this up. The world wants to know. The school set up the press conference. No one really knew. My mom didn't even ask me. You know, she went back downstairs. She made me something to eat, and because I didn't even have to go to school that day per se because of this situation. And school.
So wait, you didn't tell her? No, you said, I know where I'm going to go, but you didn't tell her which one.
I told her I know I want to go, and she didn't ask. She went downstairs. She made something together. She called school, and she made some food. My mom always loved cooking for me, and then we walked up to the school. I called Julius Thompson from the Bulletin. They gave him he rushed over there to give him the scoop. This is not like the modern times where you had the cell phones and all that. Mm-hmm. He got the scoop. He went down, and then my mom and I walked up to school. And the most amazing thing of it was I was kind of scared. You know, I'm going to make a decision. You know, I talked about it. You know, it's back and forth, blah, blah, blah. And like taking a kid to kindergarten. You know, we're walking to school. School's only four blocks away. We were going to this press conference. Didn't take the bus or drive or anything. We walked. And I'm scared, worried. I'm going to make a man's decision. And as we walk, my mom's walking the stoop, head to high. And I looked up at her. She put her hand down. She put her hand in my hand. And when I felt her hand and she smiled at me, I was good to go. I wasn't scared anymore. I walked in the press conference. It was hectic, was packed. And when I sat up there and read my statement that I was going to Duke University, everybody said, what the hell? they said, does Duke even have a basketball team? They said, what the hell is a Duke? You know, because people up north, it really wasn't connected with the ACC and all that down there. If you're lucky about the ACC, there was David Thompson when they were playing against UCLA to know about that. And everybody freaked out. And I said, it's not so much what I can do for Duke as what Duke can do for me. And the guys in the press row jumped up and ran. You know, they had to go find a phone. They had what's name phone. So you saw mass hysteria. I maintained my composure. My high school coach didn't even know because he was vying for me, hoping that I'll stay in Villanova, stay home. But that's what happened. And that changed the whole world. Duke got it, and I heard it was a mass hysteria in North Carolina at Duke, and that they got the number one player.
So, Gene, I want to move to one of the famous games from your time at Duke. I want to say it was your sophomore year, but I could be wrong about that. The Four Corners game, where Dean Smith, yeah.
Oh, where, my God.
Yeah, where Dean Smith has the I believe North Carolina was the top ranked team in the country. Duke was also like in the top five or so. And for the game at Cameron, Dean comes out. I think Duke won the opening tip and Mike Jaminski scores a bucket. And then Dean goes into the four corners.
Yeah, I think it might have been I'm not sure, but it might have been reversed. I think we were the top team.
Oh, OK.
But they were also in the top 10.
Yeah. Oh no, they were very. But both teams were outstanding clubs. But
we became number one in the following year, my sophomore year, we became number one. And then they came into our place and Dean decided to try this, caught everybody off guard.
So the thing I really wanted to know was, what was it like playing? Because what he wanted to do was to get you guys to come out of your zone. You guys had a great 2-3 zone that you played. And he was like, well, I'm not going to play against that. I'm going to force them to come out and guard us on the perimeter.
Right.
What was it like for you guys on defense to sort of be standing there just watching them pass the ball around?
For one, the advantage was we scored first. You know, that helped out by us scoring first. Now we don't have to be pursued like the referees make you. If they're ahead, they'll make you come out and play the man to man. But since we were in the lead, they had to play through it. And yes, that year we had a tenacious 2-3 zone. And we stuck with that because offensively, man-to-man, we had some players, you know, Jim Spinarco, crafty, smart, a good captain, but he wasn't a great man-to-man player. You know, we had some guys that Denard was good at that. I was good at that. We had Mike Jaminski, who was the aircraft carrier behind it, to help us. We just had recruited an amazing player, Vince Taylor. Who was on that team. He was coming off the bench. The biggest problem was that we switched John Harold and Bobby Bender. Bender, amazing. They were complimenting each other, but John was the one to set the table. Great one-on-one player, but he played very, you wouldn't think he was that good. His assist to turnover ratio was the best because he made sure Bill told him, I want you to get the ball to the big three. And he did that. In the beginning of the year, sophomore year, they changed both of them, which destroyed our team. It really destroyed the team. It divided us. Bobby Bender's a great player. The great thing that made it for John was laid back and maintained everything. Bobby would come in. He'd throw up alley-oops. He great shooter. He would take chances. So that's what made us so good was the changing of the game. And he sped the game up. But that game, being out in that game to sit out there and see them do that, I didn't think they were going to do that as long as they did. And then we also baited Chicky, Rich Yonaker. He was on the baseline to get closer. He was close enough to maybe make a layup to take a shot, and they were told not to take a shot, but it was just too tempting for Chicky not to take the shot. He shot, it was an air ball. And that was the beginning of all college basketball. Here's some more history that started the word of the chant airball.
I was just about to ask it.
We know the
same game. Yeah,
we know the story.
Cameron Crazies created that which went all out the nation throughout every college, the airball chant. They were the one that did it. And then we went ahead by 4. They held the ball for another 5 or 6 minutes. And Chicky did it twice. He shot his shot twice. And missed both of them. We went down, so we scored, and Jimmy Spinarco got fouled. And to go into a halftime with a 7-0 game on national TV, that really changed the minds of everybody about making sure we had a shot clock.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to move on because recently all of us kind of underwent something that very few people understood, and that was a transition between head coaches. And the last time that we had a transition between head coaches, you were a rising senior when Bill Foster left and yes. Coach K entered. What was the transition like as a player back then? And did you kind of see in your one year with Coach K as a player? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've known him for a long time, but did you see the glimpses of greatness in K when he entered as a young coach? Especially again, taking a team who a few years removed from
it was too early. I mean, the thing was, which is interesting, and people can take whatever they want to take it. We weren't, myself and Kenny Dodd were going to be returning seniors, and we weren't even Tom Butters. If I want to call anything else, and like I said, I'm older now, so I can say what I want without saying anything wrong. I thought it was disrespectful that he didn't even have a chance to even talk to us about what coaches we were looking at. He could care less. We weren't told anything. We weren't shared anything. Spring break came, and I went home. And I spent the next week home. Kenny Denard went down to Florida, to the Keys. He was laid out on a yacht somewhere. We took an extra week off, he and I, because we weren't even included in any of that. You know, no one said anything to him. We didn't know anything. Anything we knew, it was read in the paper or passed on to us. Bill Foster decided to leave because his many fights with Tom Butters, the athletic director. They fought about everything. You know, Bill wanted to give money that we made. We made a lot of money going to the Final Four. And then the following year, we're on ABC, NBC, national TV. So that's money coming in. We're playing at venues on. So Bill had arguments with him about simple things of like paving the outside of Camden Indoor Stadium because it was muddy, to giving women's basketball scholarship. But Tom Butters was a guy that was, he believed in fundraising, and the money he made, he put it over to certain places from the basketball to establish himself as a top fundraiser. And that, I guess that riled Bill because the money wasn't really coming back into the basketball program or any of the basketball programs. So that was one of many things, some things I don't even know. And Bill kept it quiet for a while until it leaked out. And he finally had a chance. And that was right before we were going to go to the ACC tournament. He sat down and talked to us, each one individually. And I was like, oh, well, coach, you got to do what you got to do. You know, I was trying to be like a man, you know, instead of like saying, no, you can't leave. And my dad, to this very day, hates the fact, has a dislike towards Duke. You don't hear much about my dad being involved, but he hates the fact that Bill Foster left. He said he should have left after you. You know, you could have left earlier and you stayed. People don't even know that story. That caused a real rift between my dad and them. And he says, watch what's going to happen. Bill, he left. He's going to say, he said, they're not even going to retire your number. He says, and your number should be retired. Watch. He said all these things. He was very upset. But, you know, I just went on. You know, I was the guy that was all about team first. It's not about me. But I did take that extra week off and stayed home. And we saw the news. And it said, the news came on. We're in the kitchen. My mother and my grandmother were all cooking. It says, Duke University has just signed their new head coach. And like, we cannot pronounce his name. So my mom looks at me. I look at her. I don't know. Mike Krzyzewski. So we had no one watching this. We watched this on the news. And everybody that was there thought myself and Kenny were boycotting it. We didn't know anything about it. No one told us anything. So we just happened to be home, and that was the whole thing. And coach called us, and we said, we want you to get back to school. We got back, and Kenny and myself met him in his office. He was young, very young looking, and he broke down his principles and things about we have to be men. And he knows the stories about Kenny and I are, you know, we were kings around there. I mean, we did whatever, not whatever we wanted to do, but people loved us. I mean, our team was a very beloved team by everyone. People that didn't even like Duke became liking Duke. The Durham community, most Black folks in Durham were always Carolina fans. Even though they went to NCCU, they didn't like Duke because Duke didn't have any Black players. They didn't have any significance. The only people that were Black that were at Duke were pretty much a few students and the workers. So there was no major reason to support Duke because that was a kind of situation where, you know, you guys don't want us, your privilege, and that's what Carolina. I came and I changed all of that. You know, I came there and I hung out over there. I brought people from over there from Tilden campus, and they go, Gene, we can't. They couldn't touch me because I was the new guy coming in, the Messiah. And I was able to bridge a gap between the Durham community and bring guys over there that played at Central to play in the gym before they wouldn't let them do that, to have people come over to the community. So, and it was a power I had that, not such I used, I just utilized it just to enjoy it. It was all good. And when we started winning and we were young and we were abrasive, we were funny, we were fun, and getting involved with the community, I was getting my hair cut, eating over there, spending time, and Durham community started embracing us.
Gene, I want to ask you about your pro career a little bit, mm-hmm. because I'm old enough to remember a little bit of it, but but it was a while ago. It feels like your NBA career ended faster than it should have. You were like your last year in the NBA, you were still a part-time starter on the Chicago Bulls. It seems like it could have gone longer, but you chose to go overseas I know that you went on to become one of the great players in European basketball. You're still to this day considered one of the greatest players in Israeli basketball history. By the way, do you ever get back to Israel
it wasn't my choice to leave NBA basketball. I ruptured my Achilles tendon. So that pretty much, it was my last, here's the first thing. When my senior year at Duke, we played against North Carolina A&T in the NIT. And I went up to block a shot. My legs I broke my wrist in half, completely in half, my left wrist. That was my last game. And that was 4 months before the NBA draft. So I broke my wrist. I was projected to go 1-5, something like that. I wouldn't say one, but somewhere between in the top 10. By me breaking my wrist, slid me down tremendously, a lot spots. And I wound up, got the surgery done by Dr. Frank, the late Dr. Frank Bassett. And the Lakers, several teams flew me in. I had the surgery done. I had 3 months in the cast. They took the cast off. They looked at it. Indiana brought me in. The Lakers brought me in. And you know who picked me up from the airport? Pat Riley. Pat Riley was assistant coach in there. Pat Riley picked me up from the airport. They did it. They took me to the doctors and doctors looked at my wrist and da 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 da. It was put out there from Dr. Bass that he didn't think I would be efficiently sound to play in the NBA with the broken wrist. But the thing was, it was my left wrist, not my right wrist, which is my shooting hand. So that made me drop tremendously. And what was great about it was that San Antonio Spurs didn't have a first round pick. I was the first pick in the second round, the 28th pick, and they picked me. And it probably was the best thing that ever happened to me because they were a veteran Latin team. They had the great George Iceman Gervin. And then later on, we picked up Artis Gilmore. When I went there, they made a trade. They had Mark Oberding, who was a starter. They traded Mark Oberding to Chicago to get Artis Gilmore. And I had to work, you know, to get in that spot. And I was fourth on the depth chart when the spot opened the following year for the power forward. Now, they acquired Mike Mitchell, who was 6'7". We finally traded Mark Oberding, and we got Artis Gilmore, who was 7'1". That helped. Iceman, Johnny Moore was leading the league in the assist. And I was fighting for that fourth spot, and we had Paul Griffin, Kevin Steiner. They were all 6'10". But I won that spot. I fought that spot because I could play defense, bang. But I also got on the break, and we were a fast-paced team. So Stan Allback, rest his soul, he's passed away. He had faith in me. And here we are. We're going to start 6'7" guys, and I'm playing a power forward. And he looked at me in my eyes. He said, I'm going to go with you. He said, don't make me a fool or an a-hole. He says, because I'm believing in you. And the rest is history. I want to be starting. And
You averaged almost 15 points per game that year.
15 points per game on a team that, listen, they don't even talk about this team. Johnny Moore led the league in assists, beat out Magic. Iceman was leading the league in scoring. Artis Gilmore was leading the league in field goal percentage. Mike Mitchell was an all-star, averaging 20. Artis was averaging 20. Ice was averaging 30-something points. And here I am, I got 15, playing my game. I mean, I learned how to play defense. I got on a break. I learned how to adjust to do what I was able to do. And I scored like 31 points several times. I had a 44 point game against the Lakers. So it was great times playing for that team. And we went to the Western Conference Finals twice and the Lakers beat us. The Lakers don't beat us. We're in the championship back to back. And Bob McAdoo was the one that Pat Riley got pulled in and right before the playoffs to. He was an equalizer. He was X-factor against us.
Well, Gene, this has all been fascinating. We need to take a quick break. For those of you out there, we've heard obviously a lot about Gene Bakes in the past, but now after this break, we're going to talk to Gene Bakes about Duke's present and future. So stick around for that. All right, we are back, and we are once again here with Gene Banks. Gene, it's been great to talk about your past at Duke and also in the NBA and abroad. But I want to talk to you about this team coming up, this team that is has a lot of expectations put on their back. You, I think recently we're at K Academy, so I know you've gotten to interact with some of them. But I want to ask you, start with this. When you take a look at this team this fall, for the first time in years, we have multiple starters returning. We have a lot of veteran leadership that is returning. What excites you the most about this team as they, you know, start to try and, you know, make their legacy on the basketball court?
For one, I've met some of the players, and these young men are awesome, good young men. I mean, I'm not saying because whether they have two parents or one parent, how they were raised was amazing. You know, the parents really, whether they were so into, I'm not a big fan of AAU basketball because they just take the best player, they don't do it in fundamentals, but the parents have really put a lot of time into them and gave love. And these kids, they, it's not so much they speak well, but they have manners, you know, and besides being great players. And I've had a chance to spend some time with Proctor. I love Jeremy Roach. All these guys, they you see a sense of innocence from them, but they're super talented. And Duke only goes after the elite players. Let's make it very clear. Everybody always asks me, Gene, give me a call. My kid can do this, my kid can do your kid can do all that, and I think he's probably great, but they're not going after anybody unless they're in the top 10. That's they got themselves in that situation. And you might get a guy off of that. But I'm pleased about this because Roach is coming back. Proctor's going to be better. I like the two of them. They got some group new nucleus players coming in there. And you got to understand this one and done thing is a difficult thing to coach under. You know, you got to remember Roy decided to retire. A lot of guys decided to retire because you got the transfer protocol and so forth. But I think this team is going to be special because they're getting them in early. They've seen, Roach has seen what has happened. Not saying he's probably the best guard, but to me, he's going to be a solid guard for this team. Proctor's got talent that's just going to, I'm telling you, he's really going to come off the chain once, an Australian kid. But once he gets that grit in him, if he had that city grit in him, it'd be all over. And he's going to start to get that. And Shire's in his second year. You know, there was some scuttlebutt about the concept of coaches hiring Shire. It was the greatest thing to do when you're hiring from within, from a kid that you know from ninth grade on up. The biggest controversy is more so than anything else is the fact that, you know, there was a thing where we were looking at Tommy Amaker as taking over the reins of that, and he's like a son to Coach K. And from what I hear, rumor to mill, that he had promised that this was going to happen. It would have been great during a Black Lives Matter situation to do that because Coach stood up for certain things of that nature. And there's more to it behind the scenes that I don't know. There's some that I do know that I won't necessarily disclose, but more so than anything else, it was a decision that we make. It's a business decision. It didn't sit well with a lot of the African-American players of the hiring, not against John Shire by no means, but it was the racial portion of it. But John is a brother to me. I love him to death. I have nothing but respect, and he's done a great job. I love Tommy as well, and I don't have no control of that. So for me to sit up here and take one side or the other, yes, it would have been great that Coach K would have hired an African-American to take over the program, whom that he loved and whom could do it, because Tommy was at Harvard University. So he continued on, you know, with the academics as well as the athletic. I'm just keeping it plain and simple, whether Coach hears that and doesn't like it or not, or whoever else did, but I'm just being real. He couldn't have gone wrong with either player, with John Shire coming up in the ranks. And he's got that look. He's got that mannerism. He knows the system. Tommy the same way. I will support either or. And I'm going to support the Duke program and John Shire and Coach and them. But I'm also going to have love for Tommy that, you know, I felt 50-50. He should have gotten the position. But that's water under the bridge. We're moving on. My love will stand to it. And this was a chance for Coach to have made a momentous decision. But you got to understand, too, Duke University had just hired an African, partially African-American at AD, and you also hired an African-American female, Kyra Lawson. It's a tough decision to have all three programs being run by, you know, and I'm just being, like I said, I get older, I can speak truth, and I speak truth up to power. That would have been very difficult to have all those three powerful positions of a powerful program being held by just one culture like that. And I'm just being real.
It's fascinating. That's I hadn't thought of that or considered that. And it is something that, you know, is an interesting development that would have happened at Duke. And by the way, I'll say that I think all of us, all Duke fans would have been thrilled with Tommy Amaker.
For sure.
And you're right. It's not a matter of, oh, Shire's better. It's a matter of either one of these would have been wonderful choices
for sure.
Duke. Let me ask you, though, about Shire. And you've gotten to know him over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Tell
He's
us
a brother. I love him as a brother, for sure.
Tell me, what do you see about the program now with John Shire in charge that is different versus what it was under Coach K for those very, very many, many years?
It's still early. I mean, it's still early. He's going to maintain the, you know, he's got the template. You know, he's been under the template for years. He's got everything's in order with dealing with the academics, with the students of how they got to handle classes and so forth, tutoring and school. And so he's got the template. He's been part of the template for God knows how long. So that's not going to change. What is going to change now is because of the difference of the NIL, the transfer portal, you got to be able to master that. And he's young, so he's going to be able to weasel and work himself into dealing with that. I think Coach would probably have been able to deal with it too, but he's older too, and that might have pissed him off a little bit. You know, some guys either staying or not. When you get older, you, like I said, you get honoring. But John's going to maintain and keep things in order the way he's been trained. Then also he's going to put in his mixture. That's what it's all about. Putting his mixture of it, and that's what's going to be the key to change and elevate his style of put play, because you see them playing. It's still Duke. The one thing that Duke always was known for is his great defense. Through the years, they always had that great defense. And these guys, we've had some guys, but that hasn't been the main key. You got guys that can score like you wouldn't believe. These guys are so talented. They jump higher. They're faster. The speed, but. Now you're getting ones and dones, and you got to redo your program every single year to get these guys playing together. You don't have the Virginias anymore. You remember when Virginia won the NCAA tournament? Those guys were together for 4 years, and they had some tight games. And because they had been together for so long and the experience they had, they pulled those games out. That was that experience. That's how they won it. But so Duke's got to get that experience. And with them, that's going to help them out a lot better. But they got the target on their back. You know, they're Duke. So everybody's going to be coming at them. And these mid-majors are getting players from everywhere, and they want a piece of their behinds. So they cannot sleep at all. These players now don't realize what they're getting themselves into, that when they wear a Duke brand, now they got to play twice as hard. It's like being like our parents would tell us when we were African-American. You got to work twice as hard, you know, and they have to work twice as hard now because they're wearing a Duke brand, and these teams are coming at them, and nobody's scared of them.
And with every game on TV now, you have that added element of, you know, these players want to showcase themselves because they know when they play Duke and Cameron, it's before an audience of millions, and instead of back in, you know, back even when I was in school, not every game was on television in these early non-conference days.
Yeah.
Gene, we want to get you out of here on this because I know you, like us, are a podcaster. You have your own show, The Bank Shot, with Gene Banks. Tell the people
I took it off for a year. I'm going to bring it back. So I went to Gaston College, and I helped them bring back athletics. It's Gaston College Junior College in Gastonia. Well, it's in Dallas, North Carolina, but right next. And they haven't had athletics for 50 years, basketball or sports at all. I went back, helped them with the template, helped them put together, and no matter what they say, my signature's on everything. So the hiring of the coaches and the development and structuring, I brought back athletics to Gaston College after 50 years. And that's the school where Leonard Hamilton went to, the coach of Florida State. And Leonard Hamilton was an amazing player. He scored 50 points in the game there in junior college before he went to the next place. So that was my goal. And then the following year, once I got that up, I became the advisor to the president. He barely listened to anything, but he once he got what he wanted, he was happy, and we moved. So there were some things I resigned from there after the 2 years. Once that was done and set forth, And I did some radio. I helped the radio station get themselves back up because I had the podcast. And I had a show called The Thunder and Rhino Show and Feel the Horn. So I spent my time, and I could have become more abrasive and angered about certain things that didn't go right. There were some things that didn't go right that I didn't like. Some hiring of players, the people that were there that were NCAA banded. I decided I'd get into all that. I said, let me just move on. It's great for the school. It's great for the whatever can happen. And we moved on. So I could have blew it all up, but nah, I just moved on. And then God just said, just go on into your way and handle the situation you need to go. And that's what I did.
The show that he has is called The Bank Shot. It's featuring Gene Banks and talking about a lot of things surrounding basketball and life. But Gene, above all, a Duke legend. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's an honor to
I appreciate to it too. Let me just say that they can still listen to the show. They can go to my website. My website is www.genebankslegend.com. Gene Banks Legend. And you go on there and there's a podcast section in there. When you pull it up, there's some awesome shows on there. There's shows with Lindsey Harding that's in there, George Iceman Gervin, Charles Oakley, Phil Ford, Ralph Sampson, Joey Crawford.
I got to check this out, man. This
is
it's amazing. It's amazing. And I feel so blessed to be able to have it. And it's not like any other podcast. We talk about their beginnings. You know, they're really where they started from. My high school coach is on there. There's just so many. You look on that list and you listen to the shows, and the person that helped co-design this play, Lynette Jackson, she went to high school, which is right behind me, with me, and she's an awesome producer, graphic designer, all that. And you have to, we have a trailer, like the movie trailers, before the show comes on, even though it's audio. But we're going to get back, we're redesigning and get back into, because there's some other shows I wanted to do, talking about some boxers and so forth. So our show gets in depth with some serious things. So go on to genebankslegend.com, go to podcast, listen to the show, and leave a comment and let me know what you think. It's awesome.
I mean, there's already a bunch on there. I already checked it out. So even if you need to cherry pick and see which ones, like your favorite players on there, your favorite player is probably having on the show already. So go get that and listen to that. But Gene Banks, again, thank you so much. It is our honor to have you on this show. And we look forward to seeing you in person down the road.
Guys, take care. Keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, I bleed Duke Blue. I love all the fans and the people that have been there. It's been a fantastic family. And Coach K has done a great thing with the brotherhood, getting all those guys together. And I love that portion of it. And more than anything else, like you say, I've had a great experience. And my relationship with Duke is really good all around. And I'm just thankful that I've had that journey.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Gene. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup. Again, for Gene Banks, for Jason Evans, for Sam Klein, who wishes he was here for this incredible conversation.
We missed you. He wished you on that here, one. Yeah.
But for Sam Klein, I am Donald Wine. Thank you so much. Again, check out our Linktree, linktree.com/DBR podcast. Check out all of our affiliate links that we have, including Fanatics, Home Field Apparel. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming your way. But until then, here is now the Duke Band to play us out and take us off.